Books of the Bible. The book of Micah contains prophecies against the kingdoms of Judah and Israel. Micah warns of God's judgment for idolatry and oppressing the poor, but he offers hope of salvation in the coming Messiah, who is a shepherd, a judge, and a ruler. Those whom God has saved are charged to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with their God. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Not to be self-serving again, this is Wretched Radio. Not to toot the Fortis horn, but apparently I'm going to receive an email from Doug, who either lives in Maryland or he's a medical doctor. One of the two, because he's got initials after his name. I just want to thank Dr. Lyle for his podcast, In the Beginning, and the video series titled Irrefutable Proof, both of which are available at fortisplus.org for free. Dr. Lyle is my favorite apologist, and I appreciate so much what he is doing, and both of these series are incredible. Indeed, they are. I plan on showing the video series to my Wednesday night Bible study and using the study guide, which is also free. So thank you, Fortis, and thank you, Dr. Lyle. Keep them coming. Why do I toot this horn? For two reasons. Number one, to encourage you if you are a gospel partner. People are benefiting from your support of this ministry. When you support Fortis Institute, you're basically giving free resources away. You're strengthening people. You're helping us in our evangelistic endeavors, which, by the way, we're continuing to do this fall. We're back on the campuses, and the strategy is really strong. We will be doing events with kids, but we're also going to be doing training while we're on the campus for student leaders, teaching them how to evangelize. So if you're a gospel partner, be encouraged. You're giving a lot of stuff away, and people are being blessed by it. The second reason that I wanted to share this is to encourage you, if you are not listening to the In the Beginning podcast, get on it. Yeah, you can do it at Fortis Plus, or you can do it where you Spotify or Google or Apple or whatever way you get your podcast stuff. If you listen to Jason Lyle's podcast, it is, the surprising thing about it is, it's not just like good stuff, good teaching, because you maybe think, oh, it's all about Genesis. Well, a lot of it is about Genesis because it's such a foundational book. No, it is like the foundational book in the Bible, but it's really about apologetics, and you will be more convinced of the rightness of your faith, and you will be given the tools to evangelize better. So I would encourage you, don't miss the boat, please. Start listening to Dr. Jason Lyle In the Beginning.
Many Christians often make a critical mistake. They assume that what the unbeliever says about himself and his beliefs is true. They assume that the unbeliever has correctly evaluated his own beliefs and has truthfully stated them. After all, who could know a person's beliefs better than the person himself?
I do.
Well, there is one who does, me. And that is God.
Oh, sorry.
The Lord knows the hearts of men better than they know themselves. And this would have to be the case because God is all-knowing. Furthermore, God has stated in His Word that unbelievers are self-deceived and do not truthfully report what is in their hearts. A failure to recognize this lies at the heart of many unbiblical approaches in defending the Christian faith.
This is helpful, isn't it? It doesn't mean that the individual to whom you are trying to give great news is aware of their deceived self. It doesn't mean that they are intentionally lying. It means that their minds are darkened. They don't actually believe the things that they claim to believe.
Many atheists declare that they would happily believe in God if only they were aware of any good evidence of God. Now, if their claim is true, then the solution is simple. Show them evidence of God. And indeed, many Christians often oblige by presenting evidence of design and nature or any of the classical proofs of God. Unfortunately, this approach often fails because it is based on two anti-biblical assumptions. First, that the atheist genuinely does not believe in God. And second, that the atheist would happily believe in God if evidence for God existed.
This is why for years, to the consternation of many, I have said apologetics doesn't save. It can't. It doesn't have the power to. It doesn't have the ability to. Furthermore, as we're hearing from Dr. Jason Lyle, individuals suppress truth. They don't want to believe, even if they say, well, I'd like to believe. No, no, you wouldn't, because if you wanted to, you would, but you don't, so you don't.
However, the Bible declares that both of these assumptions are false. In Romans 1, 18 through 20, we find that God's wrath is revealed from heaven against the wickedness of men. All men do know God because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them. That's Romans 1, 19. God has hardwired all people to know that He exists and is the Creator. Thus, when we look at the world, we instantly recognize it as the creation of God, which illustrates His mighty power.
Now, I think there's two apologetics in there. First of all, the creation testifies there's a creator. But second, you are indeed hardwired. Everybody is to know capital G God, not small g, capital G God, not in a salvific way. They don't know Jesus Christ in a saving way. Now, they don't even need to know the name Jehovah or Yahweh, but they know the true God exists, perhaps not in great detail. They don't know anything about the cross. They don't know about justification, but they know that God exists. It is inside of them.
For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes, His eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. That's Romans 1:20. If everyone knows God, then why are there people who claim that they do not even believe in God?
In other words, they're not telling you the truth.
Now, we use the term atheist to refer to a person who professes that he or she does not believe in God. But we have seen from Scripture that all people do know God in their heart of hearts.
Yep.
The problem is that they do not want to know God because they hate Him. For even though they knew God, they did not honor Him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations and their foolish heart was darkened. That's Romans 1:21. Now, atheists will deny that they hate God, but it remains the truth nonetheless.
It certainly does. Boy, I'm having a flashback to 20-some years ago at the cinder block bunker in the middle of a field in St. Paul, Minnesota. KKMS Radio was doing the afternoon drive show, and people could call in. And a regular caller to the program was Jan Ventura. Not Jesse, but Jan Ventura. They must have been a J family. Jan and Jesse Ventura. You remember the former governor of the state of Minnesota? He had a brother who was a very vocal atheist, and he would call in regularly. It was usually pretty friendly, usually, but he was definitely an atheist. And one day I said to him, I said, you do know that you're an enemy of God. Wow, did that set him off? I'm not an enemy of God. Now, why would he get so upset? It would be like if you said to me, Todd, you're a vacuum cleaner. I'm not a vacuum cleaner. I wouldn't react that way. Why? Because I know I'm not a vacuum cleaner, but he knows that he's an enemy of God. He knows God exists, and he knows that he's at war with them. The atheist knows these things.
Jesus indicates that the reason people reject him has nothing to do with logic, but rather is because they desire to live in sin.
Yep.
He says, this is the judgment, that the light has come into the world, and men love the darkness rather than light, for their deeds were evil. For everyone who does evil hates the light and does not come to the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed.
Hates.
That's John chapter 3, verses 19 and 20. Notice that the text says, everyone who does evil hates the light. So there is no such thing as a neutral atheist, one who is neither for nor against God. No, atheists hate the light, as all unbelievers do. So when an atheist says, I would like to believe in God if only there were evidence of his existence, well, he is lying. The Bible teaches that such a person already inescapably knows God, but hates him. The atheist does believe in God, yet he has convinced himself that he does not believe in God.
Mm-hmm. So the question, of course, is what do you do? And right now I can hear the voice of a man from New Zealand. Go to the conscience. Go to the conscience. Awaken his conscience. Circumvent the intellect. And I agree with that. I affirm that. Because apologetics do not save. They can't save. They don't have the power to save. Furthermore, these verses do raise another subject. Well, if their minds are darkened, they don't want to believe in God. How will they ever believe in God? What tap shoes do I need to put on to give the correct performance to get them to be persuaded of the rightness of the Bible? And the answer is ultimately you can't. It has to be a work of God. It has to be.
Now, there are any number of specific ways in which we can expose the unbeliever's suppressed knowledge of the truth about God. We could show that he is offended by certain behaviors that he assumes to be morally wrong. But how would morality make sense in an atheistic universe?
In other words, that's the moral argument. You could use the moral argument.
After all, what one chemical accident does to another is morally irrelevant. Or we could show that the unbeliever's confidence in science would be misplaced if atheism were true. After all, if God were not constantly upholding the universe by the word of his power, as Hebrews 1:3, then why would we expect nature to exhibit logical patterns? Even the laws of logic by which the unbeliever reasons cannot be justified apart from the biblical God. In any event, we refuse to go along with the atheist's delusion by, for example, presenting evidence on his erroneous terms. Rather, we expose his suppressed knowledge of God and call him to repent.
Good stuff, eh? That is why this good doctor said that Jason Lyle's podcast in the beginning is incredible. And did I mention it's free, courtesy of our gospel partners? This is Wretched Radio.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know, a lot of ministries talk to individuals, and that's fine. But somewhere along the way, the local church gets forgotten. And we believe that to be a big problem. Because the local church is the institution that Jesus promised to build. It's not an afterthought. It's the plan. And that's why we exist at Fortis Institute. We exist to strengthen local churches, not replace them. Everything we create, our podcasts, our videos, all of our resources and teaching, it's all designed to be useful to pastors and small group leaders and church members who want to grow. We're not trying to be your church. As a matter of fact, we're always pointing to your local church. And if that mission is something that resonates with you, would you consider joining us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner? Your support helps us create content that equips the saints and strengthens the body of Christ. And we know you have questions about what that would look like in your life, and we've got answers at FortisInstitute.org. Help us be a part of something that serves the local church. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel. You've probably heard survival of the fittest your whole life. It sounds scientific, doesn't it? It sounds like nature's doing its thing. But ideas have consequences. And that idea, it's left a trail. Our resource, What Hath Darwin Wrought, traces how Darwinian evolution reshaped the way culture thinks about human value and how those ideas were used to justify things like eugenics, forced sterilization, racism, and some of the worst atrocities of the 20th century. This isn't conspiracy theory stuff. This is documented history that most people have never been taught. This investigative series connects the dots from the classroom to the courtroom to the concentration camp, and then it brings it forward to today's debates about life, ethics, and who gets to decide which humans matter. This is compelling stuff taught very clearly, and it offers something the world doesn't, a biblical response rooted in the image of God. What Hath Darwin Wrought is streaming for free right now on Fortis Plus. Just download the app on your smartphone, on your smart TV, or simply go to fortisplus.org. Most of us haven't really thought about persecution. Not the real kind, not the kind where following Jesus actually costs you something. But Christians throughout history have indeed faced it. And depending on where things are headed, we might too. So what does the Bible say you're supposed to do when the pressure mounts? That's exactly what our resource Persecution is all about. It's teaching built on the book of 1 Peter with historical context from the Fox's Book of Martyrs. You'll get a biblical framework for faithfulness when things aren't easy anymore. Fix your hope on heaven, grow in holiness, and submit to authority. Unless they tell you to sin, and keep proclaiming the gospel anyway. This is honest teaching, and it's more timely than any of us may want to admit. Persecution, available now on Fortis Plus. Download the app for free on your smartphone, on your smart TV, or just simply go to fortisplus.org.
Attributes of God. The Bible tells us of God's faithfulness. Since God is truth, he has no desire to break his promises. Since he is omnipotent, nothing can cause him to break promises. Since his promises are based on his eternal plan, God will always keep them. Scripture called God a rock, a fortress, and a bulwark, never failing because he is faithful. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Just in case you didn't think the world was in big trouble, this is Wretched Radio. Bill Maher has been on a trajectory. No, actually, I think Bill Maher's trajectory has been pretty straight. It's a wrong trajectory, but it's been pretty straight. What has been deviating is the Democratic Party. It is becoming increasingly socialistic, although I'm not sure that I care to make the distinction between socialism and communism. Bill Maher, this is an 8-minute monologue of Bill Maher. I kid you not, in this monologue, you are going to hear him say, at the rate the Democratic Party is going, I'd rather vote for Sarah Palin. Whoa. If we don't think that there is a shifting in this country, and it's the ill winds, the cold winds of communism blowing, we should listen very carefully to Bill Maher. Wow, I never thought I'd say that.
There's not a week goes by where I don't read about some newly chosen, exciting new face in the Democratic Party. And then when that face opens its mouth, the Communist Manifesto or some other crazy comes out. Again, let's just read the quotes. The DSA platform says you work as much as you are able and no more than needed. If that was any closer to Karl Marx's dictum, from each according to his abilities to each according to his needs, they'd be sued for plagiarism. Not to leave any doubt, New York Mayor Mondani once tweeted Karl Marx's words exactly. They're not trying to hide it. Their most popular influencer, Hassan Piker, thinks communism is so groovy. He laments the fall of the two of the most murderous regimes in history, the Soviet Union and Chairman Mao's China. Mandami's aide, his top aide, Sia Weaver, said, if you don't believe in the government's sacred right to seize property, it's over, and impoverish the white middle class. What? That's a goal? You know you're supposed to scare people into voting for you, right? One of the new soon-to-be Democratic congresspeople, Darlizia Chevalier, supports seizing all properties from landlords and said, seize the means of production. Mandami has said the end goal is seizing the means of production. I think they want to seize the means of production.
Which is communism 101. That's Marxism basics.
Now, maybe you missed that in school or missed school altogether, but that's communism. That's communism, which we tried, and it doesn't work. Parties can change sometimes, you know. You have to keep up. Who freed the slaves? Republicans. Lincoln. Democrats were the racist party back then, but then JFK got elected and it switched. The DSA itself has switched, even 5 years ago. It shunned communists. That changed.
By the way, I have to insert, I don't think the racism actually in the Democratic Party has changed. I think it's more, if you will, sophisticated. But nevertheless, through their social programs and the low expectations that they demonstrate constantly, it's a softer form of racism, but it's racist nevertheless.
Things change. Now the coalition within the DSA, called the Marxist Unity Group, is in ascendance. And I must take them at their word when their words include, our commitment is to the long-term struggle for a fully liberated, classless society, in a word, communism. What do they have to do? Tweet out, elect more communists? Oh, yeah, Sia Weaver did that. Yes. Good. I'm glad you're shocked.
They put the picture of the tweet up, but just elect more communists.
People got to realize this is going on. Yes, my vote is in play. I'm not voting for anyone who thinks the wrong side won the Cold War or cheers for the Intifada like it's the World Cup.
Yep.
It's so ironic from the people who obsess about colonization. You know what's being colonized now? The Democratic Party.
Been going on. Last
month, two Democratic congressmen released an open pledge they wanted their fellow Democratic members to sign. It said, "We are capitalist, not socialist. We want safety, not lawlessness. We are proud, not ashamed of America." These should not be hard words for a congressional Democrat to sign on to.
Listen to this statistic.
You know how many did? Eight. Eight out of 212. Guys, really, there's got to be an easier way to lose the swing states. And no, this nonsense is not where most Democratic politicians are right now, but it's also becoming a raging fire festival in the party that neither is anyone putting out. People are actually getting elected now who literally don't think we should have police or prisons or borders. And again, they're not lying about who they are. The media is. Ask Ms. Chevalier about the border. She says, yes, literally abolish the border. This crowd literally wants to get rid of our form of government, the Senate, but also, and I quote, replace the president and Supreme Court with an executive and judiciary chosen by and subordinate to Congress. Yeah, no biggie. Just taking the very essence of our government, which is three branches checking each other and two and a half of them. Who could be this nuts? I'll tell you who. Morons who are still wearing COVID masks in 2026.
Sorry. I should. He's got a picture up of some one of these cuckoo meetings and they're all wearing masks.
This photo is from the DSA meeting in Denver 3 weeks ago. Yep. Okay, I'm just going to say it. Since the far left, the far, far left, is overwhelmingly made up of affluent, ultra-woke white people, you raised your kids wrong.
Wow.
You told your precious brats that every brain fart was genius, and now those brain farts are becoming Democratic Party policy.
It's interesting, increasingly. It's not exclusively, but I believe it was based on Stephen Miller from the Trump administration, identifying the people on the left, especially those that are more out front. They don't fit what would be considered cultural mainstream. His identification was they just don't look, if you will, like normal. What is the norm? They're outside of it. The color hair, the wearing of masks, the metal that they have in their face. They just don't fit mainstream. Why? Because they're fringe, and fringe is now leading this country. Fringe is what is, if you looked at that picture, if you could see it of the DSA meeting, those people, they all look different, to be charitable. They honestly look broken and damaged to me. And they're winning.
Francesca Hong, yet another major Democratic candidate who's all in on abolishing the police and is running for governor of Wisconsin, says, "I think that my perfect world would be a world without prisons because we all see the humanity in one another and then we know nobody's disposable."
Utopia. Not achievable. Now, it is because of this movement and these shifts that we now must ask ourselves the question, what's our response to this? They want total government, and they want government controlling everything. And we hear things like that, and it just causes us to bristle and get very concerned. What's the message that we have for these people? Well, of course, we can engage them with political discourse, of course. and try to a degree to reason and logic with them, although I think their positions are unreasonable and illogical. So what do we do? Well, they need a heart transplant. They need to be saved. And I might suggest to you their desire to control the government, we shouldn't be trying to mimic that and say, no, you're not going to control the government. Christians are going to control the government. In other words, what I would say would be a Stephen Wolf-like type of Christian nationalism. Ben Sass said, there is no chance on earth any of these folks who are advancing some sub-varieties of Christian nationalism are actually thinking there's math by which they're going to end women's suffrage, and yet they talk like it. Because online it seems really provocative to say things like that, and I don't really know that it's worth time to linger on some of those silly online debates. In other words, Christian nationalism isn't the solution to communist America. The solution is gospel. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.